Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you.
My guest this week is Jeff Smith. Jeff is the Chief Operating Officer of World Fuel Services, a global leader in marine aviation and land refueling with nearly $40 billion in annual revenue. As COO, Jeff is responsible for global operations as well as financial operations and shared services that support the company's line of business segments. Prior to joining World Fuel Services, Jeff was the Chief Information Officer at IBM and a C-level executive at a variety of companies, including Suncorp, Magitek, and Telstra. In this interview, Jeff discusses the form the digital transformation has taken at World Fuel Services. He talks about how the company's updated data systems now allow for customer and supplier information to be processed digitally. He also discusses how applications of artificial intelligence and machine learning are improving the company's operating margins and customer experience at the same time. We also discuss how Jeff evaluated what needed to change in the company upon arrival, and how he used the concept of job content to attract the necessary talent to drive change. We end our discussion with Jeff's outlook on the importance of cloud capabilities and digital transformation. Jeff Smith, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today. You are the Chief Operating Officer of World Fuel Services, have been for nearly 2.5 years. That's an organization that provides marketing and financing of aviation, marine, and ground transportation fuel products and other services to the tune of about $40 billion in annual revenue. When you took the role, your Chief Executive Officer, Michael Kasbar, mentioned that he was particularly excited about you because of your ability to accelerate a digital transformation, as well as your expertise in bringing agility to business teams. And I would love to cover each of those topics. And before we do, we'd love to talk a bit more about your purview as Chief Operating Officer. What are your responsibilities? What parts of the organizations report up to you and the like?
Sure. So in terms of operations, we're global. And so for me, you know, a good chunk of what I do is related to technology, because technology has a place, you know, from the initial, you know, customer experience, order to cash, procure to pay, record to report. So that plays a big piece. And that's the people and the process and the tech strategy that goes with that. But then there's overall financial operations and shared services for how do we support our line of business segments when they conduct their business, and how can we run those kind of back office functions a lot more efficiently and in the right locations with the right skills. And it's really, you know, the guts, it's the engine room, you know, that enables us to go out and attract business and, you know, execute it efficiently. That's really my core role.
And can you talk a bit about the form that digital transformation takes in an organization like yours? I mentioned a moment ago that that's clearly part of what excited the executive team about your abilities in bringing you on board. Talk a bit about the form that's taken across the now, as I say, nearly 2.5 years that you've been enrolled.
Yeah, it's quite pervasive, because the digital transformation is everything from the systems and technology that allow you to, from the very beginning of, you know, just do it, looking at the opportunity. So that's in your CRM systems. It's in your data systems that allow you to, you know, ingest customer and supplier information. It's in portal strategies. It's in self-service. Increasingly, because a lot of our supply base is third party, it's creating, you know, APIs and more of an ecosystem to allow different participants to play without having to make it so complex and build point-to-point integrations or do it manually. So in one sense, that's one piece of the digital transformation. On the other, it really is around the efficiency and using, you know, robotics and OCR and different technologies, so that every piece of data that comes in, hopefully we can bring it in digitally, we can process it digitally, we can analyze it digitally and make more sense out of all the data that we're collecting, you know, to make better business decisions. And that can be in pricing. You know, we buy an awful lot. You know, we're buying and selling, you know, $40 billion worth of energy in one way, shape, or form. And it doesn't take, a bit of intelligence. If we can use that data, you know, apply some AI and machine learning to it, can we actually improve, you know, our operating margins, but also improve the experience back to the customer? So it entails everything from the very, very beginning, from opportunity all the way back to, you know, how we close the books and do our analytics on the back end.
No doubt a lot of what you just described were things that either were in nascent forms or perhaps in some cases were already up and running. I'm curious, when you joined the organization, how much change was necessary and perhaps the change is continuing in order to realize the vision of what you just described?
I think that there's one thing I learned, you know, through war wounds, you know, in my past roles and stuff as well, is your strategy and tactics have to manage the talents that you have on the pitch. So if you want to, you know, if you want to move to the cloud aggressively and use AI and use digital technologies, you know, you have to have the skills to do that. So a good chunk of my very first year was really taking a look, you know, from the bottom up, you know, is what are our core skills we need? How do those roll up into roles? How do we, you know, create an agile organization? We did something quite different that I experienced in my last couple of jobs as well, is rather than doing an org strategy top down, go from the bottom up, look at what work needs to be done, what skills need to do that well, and apply more of a Spotify model of grouping people into small self-directed teams that are kind of loosely coupled but tightly aligned into tribes into a domain, so that you run a leaner management structure and less levels. But in order to do that, you've got to have the talent to bring that in. So we went on, you know, really strong assessment, training, bringing new skills in. And I would say over the last 2 years, we've turned over, you know, about a third of our workforce. You know, you needed that amount of replenishment to bring the skill base up, because there just really is no, you know, there's no compression algorithm for experience. You need to have done it before. So we needed to bring people in that could, you know, others could learn from at an accelerated pace and pick the right partners and ride their wave in. So I think that's the other key strategy of being ready is, you know, you're only as good as the people you surround yourself with. So we said, you know, have a principle, let's pick our partners based on the company first, product second, because your company is your leading indicator, your product and features is your lagging. We've spent, I mean, the first year was an awful lot from, you know, who do we need at the executive level? What kind of practitioners do we need? What kind of special skills and analytics and digital and cloud and replenishing to the point that we could execute the strategy that we really want to.
And I really like that. Pick people based on company first, product second, for the reasons you articulated. As you thought about the people that were the source of this replenishment, the replacement of the third or so of folks who changed over, how important was experience in the type of work that you foresaw as important or more or less important than experience in the industry?
You need experience in the industry, and we had a decent amount of that, but experience in the technologies and how to solve problems in different ways. You need a mesh. You need this kind of diversity of thought in any great organization, and that's in addition to gender and race. So you need the industry piece, but my piece, my history experience would tell me that attitude is more important than aptitude. So you need to create the right culture, and people have a much larger capacity to learn than they give themselves credit for. But you have to have the right people to create the right environment and then set high expectations. And the better people will come up to speed more quickly. We have a capacity to learn, whether it's a business domain or a technology domain, far greater than we think. But you have to have enough congestion of talent and leadership, you know, just to enable that to happen.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. I'm also curious, you talked about the need to build a better set of partners, a broader ecosystem, my word, not yours, but how I'm translating what you were describing. I'm curious what sorts of changes you made from that perspective as well. Clearly, you've been thinking about the mix of people, both internal as well as external. What sorts of changes did you make as a result of that analysis?
Well, I think on the partner side, we had a few business objectives, and I think this is probably the other thing, at least good advice for CIOs that want to, you know, take on other broader business roles, is look at it in terms of what's the business objective and the business outcome you really want to get. And one of the things that we needed to do to connect people across the world in a more effective way was to create a strong, productive environment for them so that they could collaborate and learn from each other at a faster pace. So we looked at who are the best companies in collaboration, and we were going to make, you know, hard, what I'd call student body right turns, and get on those companies, because we knew that in addition to the products they sold, we could learn different things from them. So three companies we used in what I would call the employee collaboration environment were Box, Zoom, and Slack. And they're three, you know, great run companies. It's interesting, they run similar management systems with OKRs, which are from John Doerr and how you do objectives and key results. And, you know, Box for content management, Zoom for video and PBX and communications, and then Slack for, you know, collaboration. And all three of those companies have helped us outside of just their technologies and utilizing them for the problems they've solved. We've looked at their leadership techniques. If you take a look at Zoom, one of the top rated companies to work for, actually all three of them are. We looked at their leadership techniques. We looked at their engineering practices at Box. We sit on their advisory boards to I think one of our other key principles is both parties should benefit outside the commercial relationship. And so we used those, were three key changes, I'd say, in the collaboration environment. And then we had a very big goal to close down our data centers and migrate everything to the cloud. So we partnered with AWS, and they train on site to even help us recruit at universities when we're looking at undergraduate hires, and really help us become a better company by looking at some of the things that they do in their leadership system and even how their recruiting practices, things like that. So those are four partners that we have gotten measurably better at a faster pace because we were relying on, you know, good skills internally, but also hiring what's needed, but also partnering with the people that are measurably better than the ones we were replacing.
You mentioned recruiting and some of the benefits that the partners you've chosen have offered in terms of helping you in those efforts. Yours is a business based in Miami, Florida, though operations all over the place. No doubt you've got key members of your team in many other places as well. I'm curious how recruiting to Miami, as well as some of these other areas of strategic importance to you, especially in this time of very low unemployment and of course, with technology roles in particular, harder to find great talent, what sorts of methods you've used in order to attract the talent you've described as a key to the changes you've been speaking about?
It's difficult, because I think there's two key things you have to look for. The job content, which people are interested in, that is it rich enough? Can they learn and step in? And then the talent that they're going to be surrounded in. Those are kind of the things you have to bring forward. Then you have to look at, do you have the right locations that people are interested in going? You have to pitch the environment. I mean, for Miami, we say, hey, it's a nice environment. There's no state tax. You know, it's good logistics for traveling globally with international airports. We're moving everything to the cloud and an SD-WAN and agile culture. Please come to us. So we try to sell more the job content and the environment than the actual business itself, because we find that the drivers behind the people that are interested in moving. But we also have a large operation in Costa Rica that's both technology and back office operations in London, Singapore, different areas around the world. But I think more than anything, in a low unemployment environment, they have to be attracted by the job content and who they're going to be around. And that's internally and externally. So the combination of our partners and stuff as well, we've had recruiting events at universities that AWS has gone with us and helped do kind of machine learning, autonomous vehicle races as a vehicle to show the kind of work we're on. And I think, you know, you are the company you keep. Slack has hosted us in New York, looking at lateral hires out of the Northeast. We've done the same thing in Budapest and in London. So I think you got to be creative. In some cases, you've got to actually go to where the talent is and not just through recruiters. And so we looked at the Northeast as a good place for people that might be interested in moving, you know, say to Miami because of, you know, cost and income tax benefits, as well as, you know, nice weather and great jobs. So I think it's multifaceted. It's tough for everyone. If you talk to the tech companies in the West Coast or New York or Austin, anywhere else, it's just as tough for them as well.
You mentioned earlier something that I certainly wanted to cover with you also, which is your ascent from the CIO role. You've been the chief information officer at a variety of major organizations: Ingersoll Rand, Allied Signal, Telstra, Suncorp, IBM, where you were for 3 years prior to your time at World Fuel Services. At Suncorp, I should mention, you went from CIO to chief executive officer of Suncorp's business services, a shared services arm of that Australian organization. Now, of course, as we've been discussing, you're the COO of this $40 billion energy organization, World Fuel Services. I wonder if you could talk a bit about what it was about your time as chief information officer and the several posts that you had that title in that enabled you to rise in a couple of different instances to broader sets of responsibilities.
I think one is the focus on talent. That's been something, you know, I've gone into different companies that in one way, shape or form was, needed to do, you know, kind of forklift improvements. And I think when you're put in tough situations, you know, it forces you and helps you become a better problem solver because you have to diagnose a big problem, break it into small problems and multi-process that problem through different teams. So I think the circumstances I was at, you know, Suncorp as the CEO. Originally, when the financial crisis hit and we couldn't get wholesale funding, it was, you know, very close to not being in a bank and insurance company. We almost ran out of funding. And when you have those falling off the cliff moments, you know, you can bring the skills ultimately outside of the technology skills. The greatest skills any leader can have is bring clarity of purpose to their teams and inspire them to do work and solve a problem in a different way or through multitude of ways. And I think your frame of reference has to kind of expand from technology is going to solve it all to, hey, if I get some great people, you know, in some smaller teams and break this big problem down, I can multi-process it and I can get it done at a faster pace. And then you realize those skills are just as pertinent, whether you're running procurement or finance or HR or, you know, customer service organizations. The reality is culture is the only unique thing any company has, any other thing, product strategies, you know, those can all be copied, but culture is hard. And so I think as a CIO, you learn a key skill set you learn is how to do problem solving. And I think that is, you know, something that, you know, through CIO roles that helped me a lot in getting prepared to take on a CEO of a shared service company or a COO role.
I also wanted to ask you before I let you go, as you look to the future, Jeff, what trends particularly excite you? What are some of the areas that you're investigating or even investing in as you look, say, a few years out?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the innovation and new technologies and solutions are only natively on the cloud. So I think, you know, you have to have your business has to be cloud native. This concept of, I think, hybrid cloud is just a transition to get to the ultimate state because the innovation is not being done, you know, on-prem. It is absolutely with the cloud players, and I'd say particularly, you know, AWS and Microsoft. So, you know, we have an aggressive push to close all 21 of our data centers. We've closed 10 to date in a little over a year and migrated, you know, hundreds of applications. So I think that helped. One, you do a couple of things. You can help lower your cost. You can get better performance, better data security in terms of encrypting your data and build your skills at the same time. See, it's one of those kind of trifecta of success. It helps your employees. It helps your customers. It helps your business. But I think that's the footprint in order to really take advantage of AI and machine learning and robotics. So we're doing an awful lot on robotics and machine learning. And I think that skill of machine learning and applying it to the right data in the right business problem is going to provide the biggest benefits in the future. Most people have just not taken their data as an asset. It's kind of it's a necessary evil to conduct your business as opposed to your real asset. So I think that movement of understanding that your analysis skills and your digital skills in that space to be a domain specialist in data and being able to analyze it and build algorithms and models that can make your business perform better. That to me is the next 3 years is the thing to really get good at. And if you can, you can differentiate yourself in the market.
Excellent. Well, Jeff Smith, thank you so much for taking time with me today, speaking on Technovation about your career, your rise from Chief Information Officer to broader responsibilities, your current post as CEO of World Fuel Services, and the journey so far, at least, across 2.5 years of transformation there. It's been a great conversation.
No, thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me for a special bonus episode this Thursday featuring Ajit Singh, the Chief Executive Officer of ThoughtSpot.